I'm Jerry Pippin. We are at the Civic Center in Roswell. And I tell you, the 60th anniversary, there's not many witnesses around, but we have one here, kind of. You were right there with Jesse and Marcel. Were you his next-door neighbor, Jack?
Was I when?
His next-door neighbor?
No. Okay, no, I worked for Jesse in intelligence.
Okay. And so you were in the service, too?
Oh, yeah. I was first lieutenant.
Okay.
And
this is Jack Trowbridge, by the way.
Yeah.
And Jack has an incredible story, and we're going to ask him to tell it. What happened? Tell me a little bit about you first and your relationship with Jesse.
Well, I was fairly new to the base. I had been assigned in China with General Marshall's peace team, flying with the 332nd troop carrier. When my son was born, my wife had a difficult delivery, and they put me on emergency leave from China back to the States. When I was back here in the States, I was a B-29 pilot, so the 509th grabbed me, and I did not return to China. So I was assigned then to Roswell, and further assigned to intelligence with Jesse Marcel and Major Smith and Major, I can't remember his name.
Now you were, by that time, you were a lieutenant. Were you a captain yet or a lieutenant at that
point? No, lieutenant.
And then Jesse Marcel was what, a lieutenant too?
No, he was major.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to get at. He was the top guy.
Yes, he was.
In your area.
Yes, he was A2.
Okay.
That's intelligence.
Yeah, right. And so it was his office, more or less, here in Roswell, and all of you guys were connected to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now, we had various jobs within intelligence. For instance, I was a historian for the 509th Bomb Wing, and my job was to produce a monthly history of the activities of the 509th. So that was an in-service publication, not for public.
You know, this famous picture of everybody that they took, everybody serving there, you probably were involved in taking some of those type pictures of who was serving where at the time, the yearbooks and things like that.
Well, after the incident, I was moved from intelligence to be PIO, and they shipped Walter Hout, who was a PIO, out somewhere. They broke up the team that had first-hand knowledge of all these things.
Fairly quickly, if I remember correctly. Let's talk about your incident of seeing. You saw the material, right?
Oh, yes. Saw it. Got to handle it.
Tell us how that happened.
Well, as I say, I worked in intelligence, and we worked together and we played together. So we were over at Major Marcel's home that evening for bridge. And Jesse was not there. He was out the ranch gathering this debris. So eventually he got home at night, and we broke up the bridge game to go out there and take a look at this stuff that he'd gathered.
So did he come in excited, hey, look what I have, or what? It was kind of routine, huh?
Yeah. And
well, I think it was so routine you went back to playing bridge, didn't you?
That's right.
Tell us a little bit more about that. You went out and looked at it, what, in the trunk of his car? Where?
No, government pickup.
Okay.
And he had a pretty good load of junk in there, some skin of the aircraft, which was aluminum in color with a very high mural-like finish. And, you know, it looked like a Hershey bar cover. And say you crush it, oh, you think it would take big remain crushed?
It comes
when
right
you
back
let
out.
Go, bing, it spun right back to the original shape. I saw skin. I saw girders there that had...
These are the famous I-beams they're talking about.
Yeah, I-beam.
And you saw the writing on there.
Yeah, that was in purple.
Purple.
And figures looked like owl to me, but, you know.
So they were little, in other words, like Egyptian hieroglyphics, maybe.
Yeah, very similar.
Uh-huh. So how big were these things, these I-beams the writing was on?
Well, they broke off the original crafts.
But I mean, the piece that you had there, was it 2 feet, 3 feet, 1 foot?
The pieces were about 3 feet long.
Okay.
And he had a number of those things.
So what did the major say he was showing you?
They had
did he say
permission.
Did he think it was extraterrestrial at that point?
Oh yes.
That's what I'm getting at. In other words, they says, did he say, hey, I have some pieces of a flying saucer, or did he say a UFO? Or
I don't really recall what he said, but we. It was unrestricted at the time, so we had access to touch it and to look at it. And after the bridge game broke up and everybody went home, Major Marcel transferred this stuff from the government pickup to his private automobile, a 42 Buick or something like that. And he got young Jesse up out of bed. And they looked at the pieces that he found. Jesse saw more that he was able to describe than I saw.
Was it discussed when you went back to the office? Anybody ever talk about this?
Oh, yeah. Well, the next morning.
Yeah.
He brought pieces into the office, and we looked at them and handled them. At that time, there was no classification placed on it. Later, they clamped a top secret on it and said nobody knows anything.
Now, Walter Hout, in his affidavit that just came out.
Well, he was PIO.
Yeah, and you took his job.
Yeah.
Because they moved him out. But in his affidavit, he says that the stuff that General Ramey showed in Fort Worth was not what he brought him. Did Jesse ever mention that to you?
No.
Okay.
But I saw pictures of what Jesse showed up there in Fort Worth offices, and that was a weather balloon.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Huh?
Sorry, no doubt about that. But I mean, it wasn't Jesse had gathered.
But Major Marcel never came back to you personally and said, "Boy, they really make me look silly here," or something like that. Was he upset?
No, he didn't complain about it.
Okay.
But I felt that he was treated unjustly.
You felt it reflected on him?
Yeah.
For sure. Now, the general evidently came down here to Roswell. Did you know that?
General Twining. He landed at White Sands.
Okay.
He didn't land in Roswell.
Okay, now what happened? A lot of the top brass, as they say, did they show up here? Or it was pretty more routine after that?
It was clamped down. There was no conversation about it.
Nobody
no
said
release,
anything.
Huh? No nothing.
It didn't happen.
Yeah, that's right. It was a non-event.
Yeah, you guys must have been dreaming. Go back to that bridge game.
Yeah. Marijuana was pretty strong.
Yeah, right. And we didn't know Roswell was famous for that, but anything else occur over the years? Did anybody in the military ever question you later to make sure you wouldn't talk or something?
Well, after it became sort of public knowledge, yes, I was called by an interviewer, author of some book, and I understand I mentioned in that from talking to him. But if you ask people who were there and were told to be quiet about it, They'll say, well, nothing happened.
So I'm just trying to get why everyone in the military, they just were good soldiers, I guess, that didn't want to talk about it.
You got when you, when you're told to shut
yeah,
up, you
shut up. Okay. Yeah. Now, what do you make of it 60 years later?
Oh, I think that we have had regular terrestrial visits from people from outer space. I think we've probably had help with the pyramids, maybe from them, help with the temples in Central America, moving these tremendous blocks of stone and putting them in place. And then there's the great big monument, I guess you would call it, carved into the desert of a man with a space helmet. Where did those people get
the idea
that, yeah, hey, it's a space helmet? I've probably seen it.
You think more or less the visit to Roswell and the crash is nothing new. They've been coming for a long time.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think, that, of course, it was accidental and unfortunate for them that they had the crash. But
anybody ever discuss a theory on why it crashed? I guess it was a tough...
Well, now, a couple of days before this, we had a tremendous electrical storm. Lightning, thunder, the worst I'd ever seen. Theory that the spaceship had been struck by lightning and disabled, either the craft disabled or, if they had a crew, the crew disabled, causing the crash.
They do have severe thunderstorms out here. I mean, on the 50th anniversary, they're in the hangar. I understand Dr. Lear was telling me there was a huge thunderstorm.
Ah.
And so it said they'd never seen anything like that. And so maybe people say, a thunderstorm. Well, they don't know how severe they get out here, right?
Well, that was a big thunderstorm.
See, it was big.
the good possibility that the thing got hit by lightning.
You know, now that people are talking about maybe there was a shoot down, you don't think we could shoot it down, do you? You were a pilot. You were flying B-29s.
I don't think we've shot down anything like that.
Okay. Hold on just a second.
Sure.
Anybody have a question for Jack that you'd like to ask him a question? I think you pretty well covered it, Jack. Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Anything else you'd like to say, Jack, before we close the show about this incident? Something that you'd like to make public now?
Well, I think it was unfortunate that the decision was made to classify this thing top secret and not to release the details to the American people. The reason that I heard that it was classified was that they were afraid the American people would panic. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But that is a reason, and there may have been somebody that was a power of the bee that really thought that. Especially back in those times. It's a far different era than now.
Oh, yeah. That was 1947. That's 60 years ago. Yeah.
So anyway, let's give Jack Trowbridge a big hand. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
You are a witness to Roswell, for sure. I'm Jerry Pippin.
I want to take a moment to talk to you about astrology.
We all enjoy reading astrology in the newspaper. Love, life, general. But I want to talk to you about C.C. Stevens. She's in Arizona, and she is really a top-notch astrologer. And she does something a little different, and I think you should know about it. She offers to her customers the Book of You for only $35. Literally, this is a book about you. I don't really have time in a radio commercial to go into all of the details of why you should consider ordering the Book of You. So I urge you to click on this banner that's on this page with the show and check it out. And you can order it for $35. Check, credit card, whatever.
This is a great gift idea, too, so order now.
This is Jerry Pippin, and we are at the Civic Center in Roswell, New Mexico, the 60th anniversary. And a lady that we really think probably was one of our better shows is back with us again, and she probably doesn't like to think of her life as a show, but it was an incredible story, and we'll talk a little bit more to her about it, Gloria Ann Hawkler. And, of course, the book is Diary of an Alien Abductee, and the top part of course, before the subtitle, which I read you, is Morning Glory. And, Gloria, it's great to see you.
Thank you, Jerry, for having me back.
Well, we like to have interviews with you any time we want to. We have a little bit of a movie that you made at one time.
Yes.
Let's tell the new people in the audience, and by the way, you can enter Gloria's name in our search engine, and you'll find this show. It's still there. Or you can go over to our Experiencers Gallery and click on her picture. And listen to the show, so we'll hear more details there. But let's get into, for the audience that doesn't know about this, exactly what's happening.
I am an alien abductee. The audience, they're looking at a woman right now who was so very close-minded, didn't believe in any other beings living in this large universe of ours.
You had experiences for several years. Nothing's happening to you now, right?
Yes, but they do not let me have the memories at present. Since my husband passed away in 2005, yes, I will wake up in the mornings and I will have markings on my bodies to indicate yes that.
It's still happening.
Yes,
But you don't really remember what.
No, I don't have the memories.
Now you have some pretty vivid memories from the past, which.
Yes, I do.
Tell us a little bit about what they did to, or normally when they picked you up. We went through the story earlier that you had seen the UFO outside your window of your house.
It was on Labor Day weekend. Had just gotten home with my two younger children, and I had sent them up to bed, and I had collected laundry, went upstairs, and where the armoire was located next to an open window, open door, I saw this huge light out. And at that time, in Albuquerque, they're getting ready for the hot air balloon fiesta. And at that time, they would allow hot air balloons to cross over the Sandia Mountains. We did live right there at the Sandia Mountains, at the base of the Sandia Mountains at the time. Well, I went out to the porch thinking it was a hot air balloon. And we were used to having the hot air balloons land right on our street. And the kids would have such a joy in going outside and helping the balloonist pack up their balloons. Anyway, went out to the balcony and watching this, and I didn't ever hear the propane go on and off. I called the children, and I said, there's a hot air balloon outside. Come on and look at it. Well, standing out there, to make the story short, after 3 hours, this light, large white light, was still located in the southeast corner of our home. But the funny thing about it, after getting binoculars out, we would look through the binoculars and this large white light would go out, and in a circular pattern, smaller lights would come on. It was like they were watching us. This continued on till past 3:30
in the morning.
Mm-hmm. In that time, another white light appeared coming towards the house. And around 12:30 that night, too, we had noticed about a half dozen circular, different colored lights, peach, greens, blues, yellows, above the crest of the Sandia, where there are large radio towers located. Well, this is the beginning of my story, because about 3 days later, I experienced a very severe accident on my way to work at University Hospital. walking down two flights of stairs. I got down the first flight of stairs, and the second flight, it seemed like as if someone pushed me very, very hard on my back, threw me. The witnesses say that I was flying, actually, down the stairs. I was severely injured.
So do you think somebody pushed you or you fell, or was it an accident?
Huh. What we have surmised that it was planned by these entities for me to be injured, I guess, because a couple of days later, laying in bed at home, I was not allowed to get out of bed. Both legs were wrapped. Anyway, about 10:30 after family and friends had left, my wall, the north wall of my bedroom, began pulsating.
Wall itself?
Yes, pulsating with various different colors, the same colors of these other objects that we had seen up at the crest of the Sandia Mountains. And for a while, seeing the wall pulsate like this was very soothing. But then what came through the walls was very frightening. There was five of them. Had never seen anything like what I had seen this night.
Wow.
And they came towards the bed. They were small, kind of grayish, big heads, large black eyes. I have never seen anything, ungodly creatures looking like this. And that was my very first experience. Two of them stayed at the end of the bed working on my legs. They unwrapped the wrappings from my legs. One came to my stomach area and started working there. One came up to my head.
Nothing was said. They were just going about their business?
Yes. But all the time here I'm thinking I am screaming and I'm trying to get away from them. And I thought I was hallucinating so badly. I didn't feel that they were so real until I felt their fingers on my skin, my body.
What was that touch like?
Cold.
And it was clammy or just cold?
Just cold hands that I remember, because I was very... There's no words in the vocabulary to explain what I was going through that night. Because I'm trying to get away. I couldn't understand why can't I move my body to get off the bed, to get away from these creatures. My head is going like 90 miles per hour.
Uh-huh.
You know, leave me alone,
leave me alone.
And that's when I actually felt that they are real, what came through the wall. And I was so frightened. And
so
then
the walls pulsated, and then they literally came through that wall.
Yes, yes. It
was kind of like a Casper cartoon where you see part of it, then all of it. Was that the way it worked, or they just suddenly appeared?
They just suddenly came through the wall. They just walked in right through the wall.
Wow.
Through the pulsating wall of the different colors. It was like panels of different colors.
When did you understand that you had a hybrid child?
Hybrid child? Probably a couple of years later. I knew that to be pregnant, and how am I pregnant when my uterus, when I had a hysterectomy, how can I be pregnant? But yet you feel the movement, you feel pregnant. After 3 months, then you're no longer pregnant. The memory is that more than once it's happened to me. You wake up, and normally the grays are working on you. And it's almost like, you're laying there with your legs spread apart, and they pull out this very, very small little baby. At the time that it happened, I didn't think it was a baby until they brought it to me. Can you imagine, Jerry, a baby about the size of your hand or a little bit longer than your hand? Well, anyway, they bring this little ungodly-looking little creature to you, and yet this little baby looks like you, and it looks like them, and it has the large eyes. It'll have the white of the eyes like me. One special child that I got very close to, Winshaw, very delicate, very beautiful little girl. Well, she's a young woman now. And
You write about her in the book, right?
Yes, I do. Yes, yeah. Yes. And
have you seen her recently?
No, I have not. No.
It's been
no.
a while. But been at, a one while. At one time you did see her.
Oh, every time, yes. Yeah. I got to know this child, this little hybrid child, and she's my daughter. And she's very intelligent. I had polio as a child, and she did assume the DNA, you know. She went through the polio disease as well. And the first night, why they came to me that first night is because they took DNA from my legs. They took blood and bone marrow and other qualities of my body to give to her and this other hybrid child that I had.
They can read about this in your book.
Yes.
We appreciate you coming by and talking
to us.
Thank
you. And, yes.
We could spend an hour or two with you, but
yes,
we have a show that's moving on here,
yes.
And it's time for a commercial break. And
well,
we come
back.
Well,
I appreciate you asking me to stop by.
And we have Stanton Friedman next, and he's a busy man, and he's really kind of responsible for this whole Roswell celebration going on in many ways, and he'll tell you a little bit about that. And we've had interviews about that in the past of Stanton, which are available as well on our website. Gloria Hawker, thank you very much. And let's tell the name of the book one more time.
Morning Glory, Diary of an Alien Abductee.
And she's going to leave a few copies of the book over here for us to sell for her. And we have enjoyed seeing you again, Gloria. Last time I saw you, you were not feeling as well, but you seem like you're in pretty good health now.
I am.
Well, great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm Jerry Pippin. We're from the Civic Center in Roswell, New Mexico, 60th anniversary. Stanton Friedman next. Don't go away.
Hello. This is Farah Yildizov. Maybe you have questions about love, your job, your health, money, and more. With my psychic gifts and my tarot readings, we can reveal the solutions to your deepest mysteries. Please visit me through Jerry Pippin Radio and let's find the answers together.
Click on Farah's banner for the answers to the most personal questions.